Roy Smalley is here. Myself, Lavelle Enial III is here. Jim Suhan is at the Masters, where he's probably watching more solid contact than he would if he's at Target Field watching the Twins offense. Welcome to this week's episode of the Chin Music Podcast. Roy and I are going to hold this down here for the next half an hour or so as we discuss all things Twins and a little bit of other baseball stuff going on around the league. We are brought to you by Aquarius Home Services Studio and also by Your Bolt Club. Roy, welcome to the show this week. Let's just jump right into the fact that the Twins couldn't hit the floor if they fell on it. What's going on with the offense in your mind?
Yeah, they're struggling. And I think I've made, if I haven't said it directly, I think I've made allusions to this. I did say I thought the pitching was going to be good enough for as long as the offense did what everybody thinks they're going to do. And I still think that. But my kind of oblique reference to that is they need everybody. They need, not having Royce Lewis in there is obviously really, really a hindrance, because they have the kind of hitters in the lineup. And I mentioned this, I think, maybe last week. I mean, there's not a 300 hitter in there. There's not a bona fide cleanup hitter. You know, they're going to be up and down. They're down right now, and it has been because they're the kind of hitters that will go through, you know, these extended periods of just really not swinging the bat well. And you know, Byron Buxton is like that, and Kepler is like that, and Julian has been like that. And you know, those are the guys they're really, Jeffers is like that. Those are the guys they're really counting on. And if they aren't getting three of the four guys swinging it well, they're going to have trouble scoring runs, especially against, you know, upper caliber pitching. So they need everybody. And we also talked about approach a little bit. You know, and I mentioned, and you talked about it too, Lavelle, when we were talking about this, Byron, you know, way out in front of sliders. And I mean, just looking like he has, you know, no real concept of what that pitch is. He goes through stuff like this every once in a while because his sight line about where he wants to make contact with a fastball is so far out in front of him that he, you know, and all hitters tend to do this at one time or another, and to greater or lesser degrees than one another. But, you know, there's always times when you go through and you're just looking really bad on breaking balls because you're trying to hit the ball, the fastball out in front of you. You're not letting the ball travel. And, you know, that's the problem that they have. And Rocco, you know, even said, you know, literally like them to shorten up a little bit, especially with two strikes. And, you know, you got to take a stand one way or the other. You have to say, look, these are we got a home run hitting team, and we're going to live and die by home runs and strikeouts. And that's just the, you know, hitters can't really adjust nowadays with how good the pitching is and all that and what they're trying to do. Or if you're going to say, well, with two strikes, you can shorten up. Well, then that leads to, in right from the very beginning of it at bat, if you're not feeling good, you can let the ball travel, take the inside pitches, and let the ball travel, hit the ball up the middle in the opposite way, especially early in counts with runners in scoring position. I mean, you don't need a home run all the time. Home runs will show up. It's just a truism for all of us hitters that, you know, home runs aren't hit, they're thrown. And home run pitches show up, and good hitters, you know, allow those balls to go out, those cookie pitches to go out of the ballpark. But you can't manufacture it. You can't go up there, especially runners in scoring position, and say, I'm going to get a fastball, I'm going to hit it to my pull field, when you're not feeling, you know, we're not feeling it. So they're going to run through these things. This won't be the last time. Hopefully they'll come out of this soon. Julian hit the ball to the opposite field twice for home runs. That was a great sign. Correa's swinging it well. But, you know, especially in Royce Lewis's absence, they need guys to have better at bats.
Right, right. And, you know, they tried Willie Castro at third, and I think Willie has one hit on the season. He leads the team in strikeouts, which he just can't do. You know, he's got to put the bat on the ball and get on base with use of speed. They call Jose Miranda, give him a couple of shots. He's playing two games yet, still looking for his first hit. But there are just some other weird numbers with this offense, man. Last in batting average, the last in runs scored, last in home runs. Before he went on the IL, Max Kepler had a negative 56 OPS plus, which I didn't know was possible. Kyle Farmer has not had a hit yet, but he leads the team with two stolen bases. So there's just some weird stuff going on with this offense. Does it smell a lot like last year to you? Is this a different type of funk?
No, it smells a lot like last year to me. And the reason is what I just rambled on about a second ago. This is the kind of lineup they have. These are the kind of hitters that they have. And it's going to be that way, kind of like, I don't know if you took trigonometry in high school, but you know, this, it's just a sine wave, right? I mean, it's a wave up and then a wave down and then a wave up and a wave down. And when you have hot guys that are going to hit from 240 to 280 and everybody, you know, pretty intent on hitting the ball out of the ballpark, you're going to have the down parts of these sine waves often just as much as the up waves. And I think that's what we saw last year. And last year, what happened in the second half of the season, Kepler got smoking hot and literally carried the club for a lot of it. And there were enough other guys who finally kind of got it going a little bit. So they maybe not as hot as Kepler, but sure supportive of what Kepler was doing. And I imagine we're gonna see some of that same kind of action this year.
Yep, exactly. Let's stop talking about the offense because we're just going to have to wait for them. Maybe this is the annual thing where the first 2 months of the season are just going to be woof, and then they get hot for the last 4 months when Royce Lewis comes back and some other things kick in, like Matt Wallner makes a little more contact and Ryan Jeffers gets on track. Because there's so many guys who aren't on track now that you can't expect this to continue over the long haul. But we will talk about Carlos Correa right quick. I want to get your thoughts on that. And you contributed to a Patrick Royce column touching on a subject. Roy, I am not used to seeing a shortstop go down the right field line and get involved in the relay play. Not only that, how far Correa went to get the throw from right field against the Dodgers, that bang bang play, and when Shohei Ohtani was thrown out at home plate. In terms of degree of difficulty there, Roy, scale of 1 to 10, how high was that one?
Well, it was a sensational play, but I will tell you that from a degree of difficulty, for a guy like Correa, it wasn't his top 10. I mean, he's got this cannon for an arm, right? And so if you're the manager, you're always looking for a way to use that. And when I played shortstop for Mock here at the old Met, I would go out on all relays. I didn't go down the right field line, but I would go everywhere from kind of straightaway right field to, you know, right center, all the way around to the left field line, you know, because I had a great arm and Mock wanted me to be the one, you know, turning that relay or throw around. And Carl's the same way. He's got just a rocket for an arm. And, you know, with left-handed hitters hitting, he's playing almost directly up the middle. So it would allow him to get to the right field line. I mean, it's positioning is totally different now. And so absolutely, you got a guy that has that kind of talent to get the ball out of his glove and throw a rocket and throw it accurately like he did on that play. I mean, he can do that day in, day out. That's just who he is. And, you know, good for Rocco to have him. When he's playing right behind second base or close to right behind second base as he can legally be, he can get over there. The ball rattles around down there in the corner and he gets lined up and that's your best shot. Having said all that, I mean, it sounds like I'm not impressed. I am. I'm just used to him being, I mean, this is just part of his skill set, which, by the way, are many and varied and better than Twins fans have ever seen before. I mean, it's, you know, I'm putting myself in that category of shortstops that were pretty good players that that got passed over by the talent and skill set of Carlos Correa. So, I mean, I've seen him do a lot of amazing things. That was a really excellent thing, but it's something that, you know, the throw being so online, I mean, that's an extra icing. And so I guess I should be amazed at that, but I'm not really surprised that he threw him out. And I will just throw this out, Lavelle. Nobody said anything about the great tag that that the catcher made. And right. Christian Vasquez, he took the throw, had to turn around, and he knew where home plate was. He didn't go for the runner. He went right to the court, to the outside corner of the plate, and said, "Here, you got to get here eventually. I'm going to put the glove right here." And his ability to do that just on the spot right now, you know, along with Correa's arm, I mean, that's what made that play.
No doubt, no doubt. And Roy, how much of an advantage is it when you have shortstop, since you had a gun for an arm as well? How much of an advantage is that? You can send a shortstop out farther to get relay throws, right? To get throws from the outfield to relay home. How big of an advantage is that?
Yeah, it's a big advantage. It's a really good point, a great observation by you. The most important throw, it really is the throw from the outfielder to the relay man, because if that takes a long time to get there or it's a bad throw, you've pretty much lost the opportunity to nail the runner you're trying to nail. So the closer you can get to an outfielder, you want to base it on the outfielder's arm and the outfielder's accuracy and adjust where you're going to go based on that, right? So guys that don't throw quite as well or might have, you know, get a little bit excited and throw the ball offline, you go a little bit closer and you scream and yell and wave your arms and, you know, you can kind of shock them into, right, just playing catch with you. Here, just throw me the ball and I'm gonna make up for it. You know, trust me, I'm gonna make up for it. You don't have to throw it a long way to me. I'll throw it the long way. And it's a great advantage to have a shortstop, a relay man, any relay man. It's just, generally speaking, guys that are playing second base they're there because they don't have as good arms as the guys that are playing shortstop. And so it's a great advantage to have a shortstop that can get to the spot, knows what spot per outfielder that he ought to get right to, and then have the ability to make strong, accurate throws to the plate or third base, whichever one it might be.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite relays to watch. It reminds me of a time the Twins were in Boston. This is a long time ago because Alex Ochoa was actually the right fielder that day, and he went into the corner to get a ball, and he threw the ball. I can't remember who the second baseman is. It may have been Todd Walker, but the throw got past Walker. But for some reason, Denny Hocking wandered over to back up the relay guy. And so it got past Walker. Hocking gets the ball, fires home to AJ Pierzynski, who just got bulldozed. I can't remember who the base runner was. I gotta look this up. Bulldozed at home plate. And that was the most exciting relay I've seen, just because of all the other parts and the fact that at the time you could still run it over catchers, and AJ took a big wallop there and was able to get up.
I think relay plays are really exciting. I loved them when I was playing. I loved being in the middle of that. And there's a lot that goes on as a relay man. Two things: you're the guy out in front, and you're facing the outfielder and yelling and waving your hands, giving him a target. And then as soon as you do that, you start turning to your left, being a right-handed thrower, you start turning to your left and adjust to where the throw is so that you're catching that ball sideways and moving toward the base you want to throw to at the same time. You don't just stand there, catch it, turn around. You know, you've got footwork involved and anticipating a throw and getting your body in position before you ever catch the ball and get your body moving toward, in this case, home plate.
Great stuff, Roy. Before we move on to our next subject here, a word from our sponsors.
Since winter was spring, I guess that means spring will be summer?
Yes, our hot, muggy weather will be here soon.
Scott for Aquarius Home Services.
Now is the time to schedule your AC tune-up.
And for a limited time, enjoy 50% off the regular price.
From tune-ups and repairs to new system installations, you'll enjoy amazing professional service and no surprise upfront pricing.
For a worry-free AC, visit AquariusHomeServices.com today. Aquarius, earning the right to be recommended.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with your boat club. Your boat club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, your boat club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
Okay, Roy, since we're on a roll about defense, want to get your thoughts. Carlos Correa, the Twins' best shortstop in club history. Not, you know, that's a big statement to make for a guy who's only been with the team a couple years. I covered Greg Gagne when he was with the Royals, so I know how steady of a reliable of a shortstop he was. Zoilo was great in the 60s. What are you thinking about Correa in the pantheon of Twin shortstops?
Yeah, he's the best. I think he's the most talented in the most kinds of ways. There's two kinds of best, right? It's the guy who plays there long enough and you know, accumulates, you know, all of the accolades of, you know, being good year in, year out. And, you know, Carlos hasn't done that yet. But just what he's done in the years that he's been here, what he's shown I think it's basically been, you know, what I read and what people talk about. I mean, it's been Zoilo and then me and then Gags, you know, and, you know, I think the three of us all are in the argument when you take into offense and defense into account, you know, from the shortstop position. Gagne, you know, quicker, faster, better range than I, you know, I was a better offensive player and had better numbers than Zoilo, but Zoilo's numbers basically were just because he was erratic and hurt some. The MVP season he had was as good a year as any shortstop's ever had. So, you know, there have been good players play there for 5 or 6 years minimum, but none of us could do what Carlos Correa can do on a day in, day out basis. And, you know, I should explain, you know, all the reasons that there are, but I firmly believe that all of his skill set, all the things that he can do, is kind of like talking about a five-tool player. There's probably five things we can put together to say, okay, what about this? What about that? What about that? There's five things that he does all, you know, as well or better mostly, you know, than anybody else.
No doubt. And once he starts hitting, he's actually off to a good start at the plate too. Then it's weird how your defense gets more praise the better you hit. I mean, the Gold Glove Award is kind of weird and how.
Yeah, it's really been, true, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, there was a year that Rafael Palmeiro got a Gold Glove at first base and it played like 26 games at first and the rest were DH, you know?
Yeah.
Offense comes into play more than it should.
Hard to figure, but I just briefly. Let me kind of enumerate those, you know, those five things about Correa. He makes all the routine plays. He doesn't make a lot of errors. He'll make some, but he doesn't make a lot of errors, makes all the routine plays. And the 1B of that is there are a lot of hops. When you're playing shortstop, there are a lot of hops, a lot of ground balls that can eat you up. Just little things that go awry, just, you know, as they bounce. And can translate into errors for guys. Correa makes those plays, and people don't really realize how tough some are. They look routine because they're hit relatively right at him. The hops that he was picking are not that easy. To a point there, when you see him range left or right, oftentimes he's picking a really tough hop right at the end, either on his knees from the hole or picking something, you know, going up the middle. And he said, well, that, you know, that was a nice play to go that far and then turn around and throw it. But not only that, oh, by the way, did you see him pick that hop? I mean, that was really, really great. His arm is as good or better than anybody's ever has been. His ability to use his arm. I mean, a guy's what, 6'4" and muscular, and he throws that body around like he's a gymnast. He has great body control, and he's able to throw with that great arm. He's able to throw from all kinds of body positions. He makes the great play. He makes the routine play. He makes the tough plays that you don't realize. There's just not anything that he isn't, you know, this 1A about.
It's cool when you come to the ballpark and know you could be entertained by your shortstop too.
Well, you know, the other thing, and I mentioned this to, and I don't know if Pat wrote this. I don't think he did. Patrick Royce in the article that he wrote on Sunday. But as I mentioned to him, there's also a really cool sense of legitimacy. When you've got a guy that's the best shortstop in the game, arguably, and he's your guy, he goes out there, you go out there and you're playing, you know, third or second or first or in the outfield, and you look there and you say, okay, I've got Byron Buxton playing center field and I've got Carlos Correa playing shortstop. You know, it gives this team legitimacy. That's a legitimate first-rate team just because of the way those guys can play defense. I mean, that's just the way, you know, you got fans and teammates, you know, look at it. It gives the team a real legitimacy, you know, before they even come to the plate, in my opinion.
Since we're on shortstops, I'm going to run this by you right quick. The other team in town last weekend were the Los Angeles Dodgers, and their shortstop is a guy named Mookie Betts, who is probably a Hall of Famer as a right fielder, but the Dodgers are so screwed up in the infield that they've asked Mookie to play short. So you got Mookie at short. The third baseman is not a good defensive player. Their second baseman, Gavin Lux, is barely average. And you put Mookie in between those two guys. What do you think about the fact that a guy who doesn't have any experience playing the infield is playing the infield on a major level now?
Well, we all know that Shohei Ohtani is doing things that no one's ever done with pitching and hitting the way he has done it to this point. I would put Mookie going to shortstop after all these years of playing right field and being a Gold Glove and MVP out there in right field. I would put his going to shortstop and acquitting himself well at shortstop as right behind Ohtani and shaking my head and going, who could do that? It's an amazing athletic testament to his athletic ability, his mental toughness, his willingness to be the teammate that he is. I mean, all of those things. And then, you know, on top of that, to not, you know, to be totally adequate, if not a little better out there at shortstop. It's amazing. I'm really proud of him as a former shortstop. And a guy that that after playing shortstop couldn't have gone to right field and played it like he kept going the other way to a position that's way harder. It's pretty doggone amazing.
All right, enough about shortstop play here. You touched on this last week, Roy, and I was hoping you can expand on it today. Hope for the Twins rotation. I think we've been wound up about someone taking over for Sonny Gray or at least trying to live Sonny Gray's life this year. We've seen Joe Ryan, Chris Paddock, and Louis Varland on the mound a couple times here. What are your thoughts on those three, and are you optimistic that these guys can be solid contributors?
I'm really optimistic, cautiously so. I mean, we've seen each of them twice, but I kind of teased this topic last week about Ryan especially and Paddock and Varland as well. Joe Ryan's secondary pitches, and people have heard me, you know, talk about lack of secondary pitches, that Joe Ryan's has to get better. His arsenal of secondary pitches has to get better for him to take the next step. Louis Varland, I was saying I liked him better as a reliever because I didn't think his secondary pitches would play. And with Paddock, I think you had the right call. He's he's one of the most intriguing guys because of the stuff we saw end of season last year. And can he really translate that out on the hill as a starting pitcher? So after two starts, here's what I would say. With Joe Ryan, wow. That's hard slide. He's throwing a slider, big cutter, whatever it is at 89, 90 miles an hour. That is a great pitch. And he's throwing it in good spots and he's not hanging it to right-hand hitters. And he's burying it back foot to left-handers. And it looks, 80% better, if not 100% better. His changeup, he's throwing hard as well. The split finger, he's throwing harder as well, which he needed to be able to figure out how to do. That looks really good. He hung a changeup the other day to a right-handed hitter when he pitched it at home. It was the only runs he gave up to Cleveland. And I think I can't remember if it ended up beating him. I don't think the Twins came back on that. So it was, everything looked really good in two starts, except for essentially one bad, one hanging changeup, which you have to live with. Louis Varland, same way. He's throwing a hard, big breaking slider, cutter, or something or rather, whatever he's calling it. He's got a little changeups, not bad. But in Milwaukee in particular, and even at home, against the Dodgers, he was throwing that pitch hard to the outside corner on right-hand hitters and back foot to left-handers. And two things happened in both games, especially in the Milwaukee game. One, he was just missing. So I'm cautiously optimistic that slider, hard-thrown slider that he's throwing, he's going to be able to find the release point where he tantalizes the outside corner. He just was missing. I mean, good pitches, but just outside. And also, Milwaukee, to their credit, I mean, hitters, I don't know how they took some of the pitches. They laid off of them. They didn't chase. And I'm sitting there watching from the center field camera saying, how did you not swing at that pitch? That was a good pitch. Even though it was a ball, you should have swung at it. So I think Louis needed something. He's throwing 94, 95, which is enough. If these other two pitches, especially that slider, work. And I think he's got a chance to make it work. And Paddock finally has been really good. Too many pitches. And for all of them, for all the Twins starters two times through, except for Pablo, just too many pitches. It had guys set up, couldn't quite put them away. Finally do put them away, but it's from 3-2 counts and 2-2 counts when you start at 0-2 or 1-2. So too many pitches, but Paddock hung a changeup in Milwaukee.
Right.
He pitched terrific against the Dodgers for 4 2/3. He used all his pitches to throw him in good spots. So I tell you, I mean, it's a long season. Anything can happen. I mean, this could be a fantasy, but just based on the stuff that I've seen and where they're throwing it so far, I think it's going to be really ironic if what the Twins should have done is not try to replace Sonny Gray, but try to get a thumper of a hitter.
Amazing. We're happy. We're optimistic about the rotation. We're happy with the bullpen. We just need the bats to come around, Roy. We just need the bats to come around.
That's what I've been saying, Lavelle. It's like I think it's on the offense. I've thought that from the time that they broke from spring training. So let's hope they get it together.
All right, maybe a week from now when we reconvene on this podcast, the Twins offense will have ticked up, where Jim Suhan will be back with us too. So thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the Twins Chin Music Podcast. Take care.